Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the websites onthisday.com and thisdayinmusic.com. Question number one. It was on this very day, back in which year, that Anthony Foss, F-A-A-S, of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, was granted the first U.S. patent for the accordion. He made improvements to the keyboard and enhanced the sound. So, when was that patent granted? Was that 1688, or was it 1779, or was it 1854, or was it D, 1901? So which century was that, and which year was that? Question number two, what did the singer David Jones change his name to on this very day in 1966 in order to avoid confusion with the singer Davy Jones from the Monkees? Hint, he changed his name just before the release of his song, Can't Help Thinking About Me. And although he kept his first name David, his last name was based on his liking of a particular type of hunting weapon popular in America. So, who was this well-known singer? David what? And the answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, thisdayinmusic.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of January the 12th. Well, it was on this day back in 1962 that Chubby Checker went back to number one on the U.S. singles chart with The Twist. The song first went to number one in September of 1960 and became the only record in American chart history to top the charts on two separate occasions. And it was 13 years ago today, back in 2005, that a report showed that more songs had been written about Elvis Presley than any other artist. It listed over 220 songs, including Graceland by Paul Simon, A Room at the Heartbreak Hotel by U2, Calling Elvis by Dire Straits, Happy Birthday Elvis, Loudon Wainwright III, There's a Guy Works Down the Chip Shop Swears He's Elvis by Christy McCall, I Saw Elvis in a UFO by Ray Stevens, Elvis Has Left the Building by Frank Zappa, and My Dog Thinks I'm Elvis by Ray Herndon. A lot of Elvis songs there.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send.
And finally, in transitions, we have this article written by Daniel Kreps, Rolling Stone magazine, on January the 7th, 2018. Ray Thomas, Moody Blues flautist and founding member, dead at 76. Thomas died suddenly at his home in Surrey, England. No cause of death was announced. We are deeply shocked by his passing and will miss his warmth, humor, and kindness, the label wrote. It was a privilege to have known and worked with him, and our thoughts are with his family and his wife, Lee, at this sad time, Moody Blues bassist John Lodge tweeted Sunday. Ray and I have been on this magical journey through life together since we were 14. two young kids from Birmingham who reach for the stars, and we made it together. In 1964, Thomas and keyboardist Mike Pinder formed the Moody Blues alongside drummer Graham Edge. That lineup would release the hit Go Now. As flautist, multi-instrumentalist, and singer in the Moody Blues, Thomas appeared on all of the prog rock band's albums, including their classic LPs like Days of Future Past, In Search of the Lost Chord, A Question of Balance, and Every Good Boy Deserves Favor, until his retirement in 2002. Thomas also wrote and sang Moody Blues tracks like Dear Diary. Thomas retired from the Moody Blues in 2002 after suffering from a series of health issues. In 2013, Thomas revealed that he was suffering from inoperable prostate cancer. The cancer is being held in remission, but I'll be receiving this treatment for the rest of my life, Thomas wrote on his website. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just recently announced that the Moody Blues, in April, would be inducted as part of the class of 2018, a class that includes The Cars, Dire Straits, Bon Jovi, and Nina Simone. And this has been the Moody Blues performing Nights in White Satin in the background right now. And in classical music news, we have this article entitled Music Let One-Handed Violinist Adrian Anantawan Express Himself. He wants to help others do the same. This is written by Samantha Liu on the 3rd of January 2018 for NBC News. One of Adrian Anantawan's earliest memories of wanting to play the violin is watching a segment on Sesame Street. In that clip, world-renowned musician Isaac Perlman enters the scene on crutches and approaches a character named Telly as he is playing the tuba. Perlman sits, puts his crutches down, and takes out his violin. The two then perform a rendition of Beethoven's Minuet in G. That moment captivated a young Anantawan, in part because it was the first time he saw a person who somewhat resembled him on TV. Perlman, who is probably the reigning violin virtuoso of our time, suffered from polio, and he was a huge inspiration. And Antoine, who was born without fingers on his right hand, said, "One of the things that struck me was that he had to walk up on the concert stage with crutches," he added, "and while that was a struggle for him, when he actually did play and sat down, it was just the most phenomenal, beautiful, expressive playing on the instrument ever." Perlman would later become a mentor for Anantawan in his music career, but as a young boy growing up in Toronto, Canada, Anantawan faced challenges most kids did not. He struggled with certain tasks like tying his shoes, cutting his nails, or using a knife to eat. He said school often made him feel isolated as a result. One of those moments was during a music class when he was 9 years old. All the students were to learn how to play the recorder, Anantawan recalled, but as the instrument had too many holes for the amount of fingers he had, Anantawan didn't know what to do. It was then that he and his parents started looking at different options. They tried the trumpet, but it was too loud. Anantawan also wasn't much of a singer, and so his mother decided to let him try the violin. After buying the instrument, his parents hired a teacher and took the violin to a local rehabilitation center. The center developed a customized handle that could be attached to the bow of a violin. The device seemed to work for Anantawan, and he soon took his new hobby of playing his instrument seriously. Anantawan would go on to win competitions, play for the National Youth Orchestra of Canada, and get accepted into the prestigious Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia. music allowed Anantawan to perform at the same level of his able-bodied peers, he said. I think after music and after playing the violin, that really did open up many social avenues, just because it wasn't all about how I looked when I played the violin. It was very much about how I sounded, he said. I realized that there are certain things in music that informed who I was as an interpreter and as an artist, not necessarily what it was a disability, he added. This was something unique that I had to say to the world as compared to someone else. At 34, Anantawan has become one of the world's most accomplished violinists. He has performed at the White House, for Pope John Paul II, the Dalai Lama, and at the Vancouver Winter Olympics. He's even worked with his idols, including Perlman, Pinchas Zukerman, and Anne-Sophie Mutter. Anantawan, who is of Chinese and Thai descent, said he owes much of his upbringing to his success. I think that my parents certainly instilled in me the idea that challenges weren't necessarily things to run away from, but just opportunities to grow, he said. They probably instilled this idea of working hard for everything because I had to. In order to survive and do daily routine stuff, I really had to work twice as hard. But while Anantawan has performed with some of the most elite musicians, he admits wondering whether he was being offered opportunities because of his disability. I think that it took me a while to sort that out within my mind, in terms of being called upon because I was unique in some way, he said. Like, am I really good enough in order to play in this world? If I was completely able-bodied, do I still have something to say? It was much later that it came with a sense of peace that art is all about celebrating what is unique within our experiences, he added. These days, Anantawan continues to perform around the world, but has also found a passion in teaching. After earning a master's degree in education at Harvard, he recently became chair of the music department at Massachusetts Milton Academy. In addition to that, he works with adaptive technology to help people with disabilities get into the arts. One of the projects he's worked on is an instrument called the Virtual Music Instrument, which translates physical motions into sound. His goal is to implement tools like that into his teaching. For Anantawan, seeing the increasing presence of technology in the classroom has been encouraging because he didn't have that growing up. He says his dream is to help create ways for able-bodied and disabled people to play in an orchestra together. It's going to be interesting now that the tools are there to use them in a way that promotes social connection and inclusivity rather than isolation, he said. I'd like to be able to start something that gives opportunities to children with disabilities to make music and to have a way to express themselves that goes beyond whatever disability they're labeled as, because music has that power. And in jazz music news, we have this article written by Chad Pawson, published in CBC News on the 6th of January 2018, entitled "Famous Saxophone Goes Missing from Vancouver's Orpheum Theater." The owner of a famous saxophone would like it back after it vanished from the stage of a downtown theater in Vancouver on Friday. The tenor saxophone once belonged to Ross Taggart, who died 5 years ago from cancer. Taggart was a well-known and well-loved jazz musician and a big part of Canada's jazz scene. Before he died, Taggart gave Chris Startup his Selmer Mark VI tenor saxophone. The two met in the mid-1980s when Taggart moved to British Columbia. Startup, 55, who has been playing saxophone for 37 years, was set to play a series of concerts with the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra starting Friday, using that instrument. But it disappeared after a midday rehearsal at the Orpheum Theater. For obvious reasons, it has huge sentimental value for me, he said, adding the saxophone could be worth as much as $15,000 because it was made in the 1950s. The horns left on stage after the rehearsal were closed to a stage door. I think perhaps it was maybe the most cosmetically appealing that whoever took it saw there, said Startup about Taggart's horn. It was basically an opportunity. He says playing the concerts is stressful, thinking about Taggart's horn. I can't think of a time when I've been more distracted before a concert, he said. Vancouver police said the instrument has been reported missing, and they will investigate its disappearance. Startup hopes that by spreading the message over social media, the person who took the saxophone will return it. And in music research and technology, stage fright? It doesn't just happen to performers in front of an audience. As explained in this article titled, The Science of Stage Fright, How Stress Causes Brain Freeze, by Maria Savaltzvitz, published in the November 28, 2011 issue of Time magazine. New research helps explain why at moments of peak pressure, virtually all of us are vulnerable to failures, finding it harder to recall key words at the right time, and almost impossible to focus on the task at hand. Earlier studies have shown that under high stress, the brain tends to shut off the cortical networks involved in creativity, contemplation, planning, and thinking abstractly. While that sounds like a glitch, it's actually a benefit, at least when you're facing physical threats. Taking time to consider your options is not advisable while being chased by a tiger or facing enemy fire. As the authors of a new study in Science put it, acute stress sharpens our senses, creates a state of fearful arousal, and strengthens our memories of stressful experiences, but impairs our capacity for slow deliberation. Emotional distress raised participants' levels of the stress hormone, cortisol, and elevated their heart rates. That means, basically, that under stress, the brain automatically shifts its focus away from current activity, for example, giving a recital, and towards readiness for fight or flight. That's why high stress can make your mind go blank at the worst possible moments. A faster but more primitive neural network takes over. The results of the study further suggest that adrenaline-reducing drugs such as propranolol, which is used to combat stage fright, and clonidine may improve performance by preventing or reducing the strength of the brain freeze aspects of stress.
Promise that I will not take it personal, baby. If you're moving on with someone new, 'cause baby you look happier, you do. My friend told me one day I'll feel it too, and until then I'll smile and hide the truth that I know I was happier.
Ed Sheeran's 2017 Happier introduces our rock and pop music news, entitled, Ed Sheeran Breaks Down the Massive Success of Shape of You. This is written by Nina Braca, published in Billboard.com on the 20th of December, 2017. It was hard to escape Ed Sheeran in 2017. He had a record-breaking album, a hit song, and a duet with Beyoncé. But as it turns out, one of the biggest songs was almost handed off to someone else. In a new video from the New York Times, Sheeran breaks down how the song Shape of You was written and what caused it to become a massive success.
But I guess you look happier. My friends told me one day I'll feel it too.
None of us thought that much into it, Sheeran says. I didn't make the song to be mine to sing. Songwriter Johnny McDade elaborated. Sheeran had already said everything he wanted to say for that moment on the record. We went in there just to write a song. The song ended up breaking the record for almost most weeks in the Billboard Hot 100's top 10, becoming the most streamed song on Spotify and earning top honors as the Hot 100's year-end number one song of 2017. Producer Steve Mack says, if we had went into the session writing a song for Ed Sheeran, I don't think we'd ever had recorded Shape of You. The process began when Mac played the iconic opening notes on a keyboard. Literally, the first thing he did was he went over to the keyboard and played. I was like, well, that's a good start. From there, the track quickly came together when Sheeran began to add percussion. I honestly believe it's because Ed is so impatient that he can't wait for me to get a drum sound up, Mac says. So he goes out and he says, I'll just do it on the guitar. This is 15 minutes into meeting him, and we're away. We're off. The three songwriters then tried different sounds and lyrics to go along with the track. I'm always a fan of keeping it more stripped, Sheeran says. I'm an acoustic artist, first and foremost. Finally, they added more guitar, bass, and some claps to the song to give it more weight. It kind of builds and builds and builds and then drops, Sheeran says. McCade adds that the song builds tension and then releases it. At the end, it has a moment, which I quite like, Sheeran adds. After finishing the track, Sheeran intended for it to go to someone else. He envisioned it being a duet between Rihanna and Rudimental. He played it for his record label, who then said, why are you wanting to give this away? Suddenly, it became Ed's track, and eventually a massive pop success. I don't really know what it means to choose a hit, Sheeran admits. I just like writing songs. And in local music news, we have this announcement from Pinecone.org, an upcoming blues music concert. Lorenzo Logie Meacham, Sunday, January the 14th, 2018 at 3 p.m., Daniels Auditorium at the North Carolina Museum of History. That's at 5 East Edenton Street in Raleigh. It's free and open to the public. 2 p.m., free tickets distributed, first come, first served. And, of course, parking is free on Sundays across the street from the Museum of History. Blues singer Lorenzo Logie Meacham is a storyteller, an educator, a lifelong learner, and a native of Greensboro. He grew up listening to soul music at his family's juke joint and eventually began playing himself. During the early 80s, Meacham and some of his friends created what is now known as the Piedmont Blues Preservation Society. Meacham particularly enjoys performing for children. He has earned an O. Henry Award for his commitment to arts and culture in the Triad region of North Carolina. Last year, he won the Triangle Blues Society Blues Challenge in the solo duo category, so he will represent TBS at the International Blues Challenge in Memphis the week after this performance. Street parking is free on weekends in downtown Raleigh, and the lot across Wilmington Street from the museum is also free on the weekend. Learn more about parking options and downtown Raleigh. A ramp from Edenton Street provides access to the museum's main entrance. A ramp is also available from Jones Street. Wheelchairs for interior use are available free of charge at the museum information desk. The museum entrance, closest to the auditorium, is a staircase that leads up to the glass doors on Edenton Street. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in which year that Anthony Foss of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, was granted the first U.S. patent for the accordion. Was that A, 1688, B, 1779, C, 1854, or D, 1921? Correct answer. Answer C, 1854. As noted in dictionary.onmusic.org, the accordion is a portable wind instrument consisting of two reed organs connected by a folding bellows. Expanding and contracting the bellows provides the air to vibrate the reed organs producing the sounds. It's also known as a squeeze box because of this expanding and contracting of the bellows. There is a keyboard on the right side for playing melody notes, and buttons on the left to sound bass notes and full chords. The first accordion was invented by Friedrich Buschmann in 1822 in Berlin. In 1829, another version of this instrument was given the name of accordion because of the addition of buttons played by the left hand that sounded chords. The word accord, by the way, is the French term for chord, C-H-O-R-D. It has been a popular instrument throughout the years, throughout the world. It has been popular in many cultures as the main instrument in several musical genres. These include Cajun Zydeco from America, polka of Europe and America, Latino polka of Mexico, tango of Argentina, and classical transcriptions of European composers of the 19th and 20th centuries. There have also been several serious composers that have written works for the accordion, including Tchaikovsky and Shostakovich. And as noted earlier, it was on this very day, back in 1854, that after improvements to the keyboard and enhanced sound, the first U.S. patent was granted for the accordion. Weird Al thanks you. And the answer to our second question, what did the singer David Jones change his name to on this very day in 1966 in order to avoid confusion with the singer Davy Jones from the Monkees? Hint, he changed his name just before the release of his song, Can't Help Thinking About Me. And although he kept his first name, David, his last name was based on his liking of a particular type of hunting weapon popular in America. So who was this well-known singer? Correct answer, David Bowie. He would later say that he chose Bowie because he liked that big American bear killing knife. Bowie, a leading figure in popular music for over five decades, was an English singer, songwriter, and actor. Some of his better-known pieces included Space Oddity, Let's Dance, China Girl, and Modern Love. Bowie died 2 years ago this week in New York City. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.